I'm here in Kilnalak, and I'm talking to Pather O'Brawley. Pather, you're a well-known native of this area.
Well, I was born close to here anyway.
What year?
1935.
And you're a publican?
Yes.
Retired now?
Retired. Well, no, retired, but maybe back in again.
And very connected to the GAA over the years.
Yes, without a doubt, yeah.
Tell me, what was it like growing up in this village?
It wouldn't be this village. I'd be 3 miles or 4 miles out beside the shores of Loch Sheelan. I was born on a farm of about 70 acres. And there were 3 in my family. And farming was their thing to do. And, of course, fishing. There was 2 things about the fishing. It was for just to do something, and then it was used for the food for the house. And the things we had were cattle, sheep, goats, a bull, and a number of other general cattle would be around the house.
And in that area, your neighbouring farmers, mostly from the Protestant tradition, I would imagine.
Yeah, there would be. Yeah, well, the Catholics probably would have the numbers, but the Protestants would have the most of the land. They were the big landowners, in County Cavan at that time. The landlords were the Maxwells, and in County Cavan they owned 28,000 acres of land, which was enormous and is still enormous, you know.
So, I suppose to ask you, first of all, there's a lot of history associated with the landed gentry and the land. So, over the years, would your father and your grandfather, when they were farming the land there, did they get on okay with their neighbours?
Oh, they did, yes. There was no real difficulty, and while there was a great feeling of loss when the Protestant took over the Catholic lands, they did sit down and went together. And in my time, when the work would come in the springtime, our thing would be between a couple of Protestants and a couple of Catholics working together, working in corps, as they used to say, you know. And that went on, and even the machinery in the lands and the various lands that were there would be divided up as needed. And then there were ordinary workmen that would come in and do the spade work. But at the time, it was all very... I don't remember, in fact, any row between the Protestants and the Catholics, except one. And it was one when the Protestants were having the 12th of July march. And they were marching up the road near the Protestant church.
Where is this now?
It's just about 400-500 yards from where I was born. In the parish of Ballymacue. So they were marching up, and a man, I won't name him, was on a horse, and he turned out, and as a Catholic man went by, he hit him with a whip and caught him around the neck. Now that broke into a row that lasted for a long time, and it was very hard to be settled, and people were even brought down from Dublin to mediate.
And
you know.
Did you witness that?
Oh no! I was only very small at that time.
You were there as a youngster, were you?
No. I wouldn't be born at that time.
Okay.
But I'm talking about my father and mother and the people who talked about it, you know. So take away maybe 30 years from me, and then you might be about it. Although the first school, that first national school that I went to was the local Protestant school. And the reason for that was that I was the lone student going from our town land in that day, and there was an old school being built away down, and it was a long journey away, and my parents decided that the thing to do was to send me up for a start to the Protestant school, and after a while I could go to the Catholic school, which is what happened.
Oh, and were you accepted?
Oh, I accepted. Oh, yes, I was accepted. There were a couple of remarks I remember now. Of course, I was very young at the time, but I do remember one time I was going up a step, and a Protestant fellow caught me by the back of the neck and pulled me back down. Now, the teacher immediately took him in and gave him two slaps, you know. So that will tell you what it was. No, there was no great, although that thing was always there. That this was our land, we haven't our land, when are we going to get it back, you know? And as time went on, and as I said, everything settled down, there was still no big rush to take back land of Protestants or demand it was. There was a few things about measurements that were difficult to do.
Like what?
Well, where there weren't good places dividing the land, where maybe land was among two or three farmers, you know, small land was often among a number of farmers, you see, so there was a few things about that, but nothing really big, nothing historical in it. There was a difficulty about a bog, Turbary rights. Of course, you know what Turbary rights are.
Yes.
That created plenty of difficulty, you know. And even to this day, when we are now doing tree planting, if I can call it that, the Turbary is coming up because the bogs are now dug up in that area, and all you have is rushes and soft ground. So where is the breaking ground between them? It's quite difficult. Although there are in the upper stages a good list of where it should be anyway, you know, where the Turbary, and even the names of the people who had it away back in those days are there in Dublin, or maybe in Belfast, because Belfast was the place at the time, you know.
Okay, but your family were rooted in that area for...
They were rooted originally down in the Midlands, and they came up from, I think they got into trouble there about land, and they came up to a place called Old Castle up there, and they spread out then, and one branch of them came down to Lough Sheelan, which is my place, and there we are. Now, they would have come before, well, I suppose early 1900s or something like that, you know.
Okay, but so but it's three generations, is it?
It's four.
It's four generations.
At least four, yeah.
So, and all that, and so 70 acres would have been a big farm.
Oh, it was.
A strong farm.
It was a strong farm. Now, do you see, they had, there was a fight for that too, and they got it, and of course the Protestants came in, other Protestants came in, but apparently they got reinforcements, and the Bradys won, and that was it. That's the end of it. Yeah. And the farm still lies in two parts. And most of the Turbary rights belongs to me. And I am now putting a forest into it.
Oh, very good. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So, but the people talk about ethnic cleansing along the border.
No. I have no reflection, or that's not the word, of a straight up row between a Catholic and a Protestant. They got on together. There were arguments, but there was no court cases. There was no rows at night. There were rows at night, but they were between the Protestants and the Catholics themselves. Although it would be the mainly Catholics, and maybe after a few drinks, or maybe after a row in a pub or something like that. Okay. There would be a row, but generally on the streets, and I can't recall one which you could say was an actual row between Catholics and Protestants.
And their traditions and the Catholics' traditions, for example, their 12th of July march, and
as you explained,
that went ahead. Did that continue?
It continued. And when I went on, and I jumped in a good many number of years now, at one time I will go back again to it, but I got a scholarship and I was coming back home. And it was 1952, and where was I to get something to do, because everything's very bad. And my father said, you know, the motoring industry is getting, maybe you should try and get learn it and that. So I was sent in here to the local garage. And this is where I was then, but one of my things was driving Hackney cars. And one of my things for several years was driving people down to the north, to Enniskillen, to the walk, as they call it.
Well, explain that. When you say the walk,
the walk is the
oh yeah, the 12th of July march.
The 12th of July march.
Yeah. Oh yes,
yeah, that's right. So I went down there, and indeed the first day I was there, I noticed that a lot of cars were coming in and out of the town. You know, the big area given over to it, of course. You know, and it was getting in and out, and I didn't know why they were coming so fast over and back. So the second year I discovered that what it was that they collected in the town, you see, and had their various talks and whatever they got on with, and then they went down to the field, and then of course people got thirsty and they went into the pubs for a few drinks, and then the taxis, well, they weren't taxis, they were Hackney cars, that's what was happening. They were bringing them in and bringing them out from their feeding or whatever they were doing, their drinking or whatever it could be. So that's what I was doing. So for 4 or 5 years, I had a very good day on the 12th of July, because at least there were good payments anyway. you got a good few shillings out of each one.
Were these local farmers here that you were bringing up in
the
taxi?
There would be, I suppose, at that time now, there would be 10 or 12 carload of orange men going down there. And down there.
Was it very important to them? I mean, was it?
Oh, very important to them, yeah. It was very important, and they were careful not to overdo it, because, you know, they wore the badge here in the shed. Now, when I'd collect them in the car, the four badges were in the car. Our first stop was for the drinking can in town, but when we went into the pub, all the badges were down, you know?
Okay.
And then when we got into the car, they were back up again, and then they went down again in Clonus. And when we crossed the border outside Clonus, then they were there for the whole day.
Yeah.
They came back then, maybe about 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night, and they had a big hoolie of their own in the Protestant Hall, which was still out there in Ballymacue, and still there. And it has done up very well. It's right against the Protestant Church. Now, Catholics were not allowed into those things, because they were probably afraid there'd be trouble, you know. But that's the way it went, and the next day it was back to normal.
Because at that particular time, the end of the 50s, early 60s, you had that little, you had trouble, you had a difficulty with the...
there were difficulties and things, when things were starting to, even at that time in the north, you know, they were just rumbling now, you know, at that time. Far different from what it became afterwards. But the rumble was there, and even if there was another rumble or something, there was already somebody to stand in and say, look, have a bit of manners, won't you? They were all the one, you know, and that sort of thing went on. But anyway, the orange men, there were some of them now that did dote, you know, and there was a difficulty, but one road up here, this road out of this town, and the orange men coming home with probably a good few drinks did a lot of damage, and there was a man killed one night, and there was a priest killed just outside this village as well.
What was his name?
I'll have to get that name properly, because I'm afraid I might give you the wrong one.
Okay.
But I will get it for you.
So it came very close to home.
It was very close to home. Oh, it was actually, well, it was a small, close-knit community. And the next one out was another small community. This is Ballymacue, then the next one was Manugent. The next thing was further on. So they were all tightly knit and all that, you know.
Yeah. And wasn't there a sense, you know, that these people were beginning to take hold or did that kind of rowdyism, did that only just last for that period of time?
It only lasted for that period of time, although in as you got close to the border now, there would be more of it. But even then, we'll say Clonus would be the nearest town to the border with the north. It was still good enough. And even in Fermanagh, it never got to the level of the far north. You know. It never did.
There wasn't very personal grudges.
Grudges, no. Now, for instance, the GAA was never attacked. There might have been an attack two or three there, but it was not much. But the GAA went into the north. And indeed, in some of the worst of it, I drove cars into the north and went to the north myself in the very, very worst of it. And things were difficult and the nights were very dangerous coming home. But we all got to it and went there and that. Some things you'd be very much annoyed about. I was chairman of the Cavan GAA and I was invited down to Donegal to present medals in Donegal. And sure, I stayed there and had a few drinks and I left, I suppose, about 11 or 12 o'clock and came home to the... And at the border was stopped and the man came out of where he was in his thing and asked me usual questions what I was doing. He asked me for my passport anyway. He went away with it. And at 7 o'clock the next morning, I was allowed to get out.
Yeah.
You know. Now, that kind of thing was there. You know, now that was a British Army, or maybe a local, but I don't think so. I think it was a British Army man, you know.
So but that, you see, that was intimidation.
That was intimidation. Well, then the other side of it was coming down that very same night. This is a bit of a story. We came through the border on that side, which was much further up, and we were stopped when we were about maybe 100 yards into the south, you know. So, of course, it was the usual, give me your papers and look on the back of the car. And they wouldn't open the car, you see. You had opened the car and stand around. And he handed me, I was driving the car, he handed me back the documents. And he says, "How do you like Great Britain, sir?" And a fella in the car with a few drinks says, "How do you like Semtex?" "Get out of the car, sir. All out of the car. All out of the car. All out of the car." 4 hours in the car.
Oh, so in fact, so that kind of, you had to be careful of what you say.
Very, very careful, very careful. We went with a musical thing to the north one time, up to the mid-north now, near Derry. And we had music with us and all that. We were in a competition. And we got home and we had great things going and there plenty of drinks and that and we were stopped. But lucky enough, there was a big crowd of us in it and there was as many people as there were soldiers and the like of that. And what some of the boys had a great idea, they took out the instruments in the middle of the road and started to play them for the British Army. And after about 2 hours, the British Army said, "Let it go to hell. Go home."
So yeah, but living with that kind of difficulty and crossing the border each time and worrying about being stopped and being for ages.
Oh, every time you had it now, you wouldn't just let go, or you were very careful to do the right thing and not insult anybody.
Yeah.
You know, because you just wouldn't know where you'd be, you know.
And tell me, Peter, you're very much down here in the rural part of Cavan.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at the same time, you're not far away from the borderline.
Well, sure. It's I drive to Cavan, and after a few miles, sure, I'm in the north.
You're in there.
And between Cavan, between Clonus, between Cavan and the border, you're in the north four times.
So was there a lot
it goes like this.
Of course it does. But
down here, as you were telling me earlier, there is a kind of a strong Republican.
Oh, there is. Yeah, there is. There is a strong Republican background, and well, we see De Valera was in power, and he was knocked out in 1939, and the Plan Republic came in. And Plan Republic immediately became very popular.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular. And the government made a mistake one time, and there was teachers went on strike in Dublin and down the country as well. And De Valera wouldn't do anything for them. And with that, at the next election, De Valera was knocked out. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things that knocked out De Valera. So Sean McBride took over. He was a brilliant man.
Mm.
I really admired Sean McBride. He was a Republican, but he was always said he was fighting for the goodness of Ireland and he didn't want to kill anyone, and etc., etc., etc. But of course, the big powers, the bigger government parties and the like of that got together, and eventually they got their way back in. And the inter-party government that was put in at that time was knocked out in 1951.
Mm.
But they got back into power again in 1955. And they carried on, but then a lot of other things happened, which we won't go into now.
Like what?
Well, people dropping out of the Fianna Fáil, well, not Fianna Fáil, of Clan Republic and the smaller groups. Now, at that time, there was a lot of other parties, such as Cumann na Gael, not Cumann na Gael, the Farmers' Party were down in the West, and there was three or four of them. Cumann na Mban then was there as well. That was the woman's thing. And there's another one I can't think of at the moment, but it will eventually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were dotted around the country,
yeah.
And they got people into all the constituencies. But as time went on, and the money got bigger, and the bigger men got bigger, well, the small parties just drifted away. And
you were a member, were you?
I was. I was a member, yeah, yeah. I was indeed. I was young. I was working in the garage here. And the boss of it was a very strong Republican, and there was a doctor called Dr. Plunkett, and he was the local dispensary doctor, and he was the leader here, you know.
Mm.
And then there was I had done something in the school one night, and I recited a poem, and the next thing was he brought me out in a couple of days, and he says, "You can speak." Oh, well, I said, I can say a few words. Oh, no, you're more than that, you're better than that. You'll have to come to it as understand. So I found myself at about 17 speaking at these things for Clan na Public thing.
Did you?
I did, yeah.
And that, of course, got you going in other organisations,
of course,
like
it did.
GAA.
Oh,
as
yeah.
Well.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You became president of the GAA.
I did, I am the president at the moment.
Or are you?
Yeah,
as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that'll tell you now that you're, but that being having that involvement all your life of being so, I suppose a traditionalist,
yeah.
I could call you.
No, I'd be a traditionalist. So I would, yeah. I believe in a united Ireland. I'm not prepared to shoot anyone about it, but I think it would never be settled until it gets united. And one of the worst things that ever happened was the establishment of Northern Ireland.
All right, now, but before we talk about that,
yeah.
Let me talk about your own position with the GAA, because you're so deeply rooted there as well.
Yeah.
Did you see the GAA here as a political, another political movement?
No, not now for some considerable time. The GAA was the GAA, and the other people were the other people, and it was simply get a field and get enough people to have a game. And if you had that, it kind of stopped at that. Now, there would sometimes come in a couple of fellas and say, this bloody Brit should be got out of here. And there was a soldier last night and he killed somebody and he shouldn't be here at all.
Was that a kind of a trying to recruit?
It was nearly the start of it, you know. Now, of course...
did you allow that happen? Like, I mean... It drifted in.
Well, then, of course, there were the local police as well. You know, there were local police away from the Gardaí, you know. What was the names? It's just gone out of my head again. I'll think of it too. There was two of them. And, God, it's so long now since I saw any of them. I'm going back 50 or 60 years. But these men were locals, and I'll get the names of them and all that because I have it in the house. And they went out at night and they marched around and tried to stop anything happening and that. There was a definite urge of the government not to let it get out of hand, you know. So these men went out at night and they had uniforms on them and they marched up and down and they went away every couple of years to the Curra and they learned more about what they should be doing. And I always thought it was a very good thing, and they used to march when there'd be a big match in Breffni Park. You'd see them there marching, and you know. Mm.
And so these were not Gardaí as such, but they were citizens.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Sinn Féin wasn't really mentioned very much at that time, except until it came to the man Riley here at that point, when people of power and that came in, such as the garage man and the doctor and other people like that. They started to say, look, it'll never go unless we stop it, you know. Yeah. And from there, it started. And young people then went to the north. Well, of course, there was always big immigration to the north. Because in the north, at the end of the whole thing, the north had twice the amount of money, if we put it like that, as we have in the south. Now, it's all turned on its head now. The south is doubly as rich as the north at the moment.
Okay.
And at that time, because the money was floating over from England into the north, we didn't have anything like that. And mind you, the north, not all the north, but a certain section close to the borders were absolutely sure that it would be 32 counties, because in their view, the Catholics were drunk and they weren't at school or they weren't at enough schools. They knew nothing. They didn't know how to run the land. They were always drunk. And someday, the old thing was they'll have to go back to the Queen, or we'll have to go back to Mammy, they used to say, which was England.
Yeah.
You know.
And so you're talking about the 50s and 60s now.
I'm talking about, we'll say, 1952,
yeah,
53. And I can remember that pretty well, because going back to Lough Sheelin again, when the war was over, the Second World War was over, the government, of course, then, when it didn't matter which government was in, they were trying to rebuild the country and get people home and get people going again and do various things. And they started to look at, James Dillon now brought up this thing, that if we could get the beauty of the country running, they would come back from England and America and various places like that. He was right, of course. And people got into that kind of thing. And I suppose it was very good and lasted a long time. And it was one of the things that brought us around. Now, one of the things that the people hit on was electricity. Mm-hmm. And then the question was, there's no good houses here to house people if they come, and there's the lake there, and we have nobody to come from England and all that, so we'll have to try and build up and get these houses in. And that worked very well, and that was going then for a good while when the electricity came in. Now, when the electricity came in, the government, or the people in charge, sent around groups of people to go from door to door, would you take electricity and pay for it? You know, that was the question.
And so when did electricity come in here? In the 1940s?
It didn't come to 1960. And I'm now in 1952, and I'll tell you why.
Go away.
The boys did their tour and came back with long faces. You haven't enough people that would take it, you know. We, the Catholics and a good many Protestants, were just absolutely deflected altogether, you know. It was just terrible. I remember my mother went over to a Protestant mother, and she said, "Isn't it wonderful, Mrs. So-and-so, that we're going to get this? There's no more owl candles or no more rooting with anything. We'll have it all." "Oh, but Mrs. Brady, paying for it in the winter, in the summertime, when you're not paying, when you're not using it." That was the reason we couldn't. It turned out that there was a group of people in Fermanagh who had canvassed the rural areas and said, "The Catholics won't last. They're gone, they're gone." And so Gilligan is gone, Maligan is gone, and there were a lot of people going away at the time.
Yeah.
But that left it that from 1952, when our government was prepared to put in the electricity at Lough Sheelan, it didn't come because of that until 1960.
My goodness, yeah. No. Yeah, so politics play a big part, don't they?
Oh, it does. It does. It comes in and out and through and rises and goes back down again.
And just on that, so you had then Bloody Sunday in 1969 and then 1970, and then that's when the troubles really started.
Well, the troubles...
When did they start down here? When did people started taking an interest in... And getting involved and...
Well, I suppose it was always there. It grew up slowly in the north. But after that attack that was made on the local people, the Irish people in... the hell was the name of that town? Not far away.
Belturbet?
No, further
up. Oh, no.
Higher up.
Yeah.
They marched from... And these people weren't armed now.
Mm.
They were looking for to get in so that they could get part of the system, you know?
Yeah.
And they were attacked by both British Army and local police within about... 20 miles off Enniskillen, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe a bit further up than that. Now, they were really attacked and brutally attacked, you know. So that really was the first main thing, the first battle that happened between the two sides, you know. Now, one side was, of course, covered with guns and that, and the others weren't. But that wasn't the real point. It was the locals then, or the people on this side, we'll call them that. And, of course, the friends who came down from Derry to that march all felt that if we get into it now, we'll be all right, you know.
Yeah.
But the damage that was done with that was what you were saying, you know.
Yeah.
That march.
But
now, then, from that on, then there's another one. Oh, of course, then. Then, it blew, Derry.
The Bogside.
The Bogside. It was never settled.
You know. So, but down here was a safe haven.
It was.
For those who were penetrating the North Sea and
the wood
fighting and then retreating back.
Oh, yes.
Were there a lot of safe houses in this
area? Oh, yes.
Really?
Oh, indeed there were.
My goodness,
indeed
yeah.
Indeed there were, yeah. And mind you, there's some of them still that say it will come back again and we'll have it. And as they caught it, they put the guns on the roof and they're still there.
Imagine.
Now, there may not be a lot of them, but I know some.
And so
So that's the way it was. That's the way life was.
Now,
there were people in the north, and they were living in fear of their lives.
There were,
but it wasn't the case down here, obviously, because there was no chance that
chance. Well, of course, there was. They did come in from the north, but they never came in too far. Mm. You know, it came in 10 or 12 miles of the border. And then, of course, the biggest one of all then was the crash in Dublin and Monaghan. Mm. It was all lost at that then. That was then.
You mean the bombs that went off
in Dublin and Monaghan, yeah.
And Baltorbet at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. And even the Baltorbet was a very, very terrible one altogether. His two children were killed. Mm. And that has never been forgiven, although it's known who did it. The stuff was brought from Belfast and given to people near Fermanagh, and he went over. I think he went with a bicycle with the bomb. Mm. It blew up anyway, and there was that. Very sad.
But so the it's interesting. I always assumed that. In the GAA, that the games were played, that it was football, it was hurling, and it stopped at that. You know that there wasn't too much.
No, the GAA was one of the great things that we had, because it took so many people away. They got so involved with the GAA that now plenty of them went into the two, but they did both. But the big move was to the GAA, and that took it took the pressure out of the systems, because you then had the Protestants on one side, or whatever other game they'd have, and the Catholics were all together.
The foreign games
is what I was looking for, yeah. And it did work. It did work. Now, I drove cars up and down through the north at that time, you know. And it was really scary, really scary.
Were you ever threatened? Was your life?
Oh, it was. Yeah. Well, I suppose not to an awful extent. It was kind of a sideways thing. You'd better watch out for it, and something happened to you. You know that. That kind of a thing, you know. Yeah, you'll not be here anymore. You come up this road again, but I'll tell you that. You know.
So was that the 70s then, or the 80s?
Oh, you were coming into the 70s, oh, you were. Yeah. Oh, definitely well into the 70s.
So do you call yourself a victim of that violence that went
on? I would, yeah. I was doing that, you know, driving people up to the north. There was, I had to go a lot of the time to the north. With people going to Canada. Canada was a great taking off place for people going. The Rockfield Dock in Belfast. And the only difficulty about that was you could drive up, and if the boat came from Liverpool, which would be going over the sea, and you had to wait for the people to get out and go down, coming home, the border would be blocked and there you were. And you had two things to do then. You could sleep in the car, or you could get up and walk several miles to the fella that had the key to open the door.
Go away.
That was it.
But you
couldn't go to a by road and do it. Because if you did, it'd be known, and you wouldn't get back again the next time. Because you would have sent in a document, and there was no document to cover it in Belfast.
And they'd have you spotted that.
And they'd have you spotted that. Yeah, that's right.
But that was living in a most extraordinary time.
Extraordinary time. Now, it did give an upance to some other things as well. Now, to go into the north, you had to have a triptych. And a triptych was several documents, you know. And you handed it to the character there, and he was going over it and going over it and going over it. And he gave you back, and things were backing up, you know.
Yeah.
So then a good many, well, these were mainly women and men too, got into their little shops are just close to the border, and they got in loads of these triptychs, you see, and of course they were doing it every day, and all you had to do was to stop, hand in your stuff. She scribbled it down and scribbled it down, and you gave her a half crown and away you went.
Mm-hmm. But there was a payoff.
There was a payoff. There was a payoff. There was a payoff.
Imagine. Yeah. Yeah. So in your Hackney, driving up, or your taxi eventually, the people that were in the taxi with you, they'd all be questioned and they'd all be...
They would. There would be sometimes. Of course, as usual, there were good people. There were good soldiers too. And they'd look in and say, go on, you know.
Yeah.
But then there was the other, you know. Especially if it was after a couple of soldiers were killed. That was the dangerous time. Because there was often hit back, you know. That was
so the news must have been very important to you to turn on the news every God. Day and see what's going on.
Oh, it was absolute. That's absolute. You wouldn't leave. Yeah. And the car radio was on at all time, and it was on to the RTE, and then it went to Belfast when you went over the border, you know.
Yeah.
Because RTE wasn't good in the north at the time.
And so tell me, as a publican then in the village here, you had to be in the middle, really, hadn't you? Or you had to keep your head down?
Well, you wouldn't, because there were all Republicans.
Oh, were they? Oh, was the Republican pub? So
the row would take out about
what was the name of the pub?
O'Brady's.
O'Brady's
pub. Well, it was Donohoe's.
Okay.
It was Donohoe's, and I got married into the pub.
Oh, I see.
And it's still there. It's down there, the street. You can see it there. Brady's over the door. So it's closed at the moment, but I'm sure it is a nice pub.
Oh, I'd love to see it. Actually, I must call again, because, you know, I feel that the story needs to be told from this area, especially this area, more.
And
I know you have one or two people that you want me to... talk.
Yeah, well, I rang him and I can't get him now this evening, but I will get him. Yeah. I will get him. And them couple of things that I couldn't think of. You see, I'm 82, do you see, and I do forget things now.
Pather O'Brawley, thank you very much indeed.
No, no,
thank you.
No, you'll be welcome back, and I will have thought up a few things for you too, because, for instance, our pub particularly was the pub you went to have a bit of crack, you know. And there were oldish men that went there. There were farmers and there were everything. And they always had a few bob, and they came in every night and they discussed everything and anything that could be, and fought about it as well. And you'd often say that, Jesus, they'll never come back. The following night, there they were. And I'll give you some of the stories that's to be told.
Lovely.
Out of the pub.
I'd love that. Thanks.
Because it'll give you an idea of the kind of people that were there. And, of course, they weren't all from Kilmallock. They were from my own town lands and all that sort
of stuff. Of course. That was the meeting house.
I'll give you 10 or 12 or something like that, you know.